Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Medium. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the week include Mike Zuzlo at GlobalAnalytics.biz. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Joe Vaklovic is at Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. And Dell Durkles is with Grain Cycles. That's at Grain Cycles on Twitter. And you can find him in Bloomington, Illinois. Chad Hart joins us as well from Iowa State University there in Ames, Iowa. I think, Chad, I'd like to start with you today. There was going around on Twitter this week a PDF that you have produced sometime probably in early July with a 135 national average yield for corn. Can you explain to me a little bit about how you got there and what this was all about?
Sure. What this was all about, I'll start there. We've been getting a lot of questions over the course of this spring about what's the relationship between that planting progress and our final yields. And so I conducted a similar study to what I know Dr. Zerwin and Hubs there at Illinois did, sort of looking at that relationship. And what I ended up doing was taking all the data we've got from 1980 until now, because 1980 was the first time USDA put out that planting progress number, and look to see, basically, you know, sort of search through, okay, what day during the planting season seems to have the best fitting relationship with what we end up with final yields. Turns out for corn, it's May 20th. The planting progress on that date seems to give the best, if you will, R squared, the best fit with yields as we look out there. Fit the curve to it. What it pointed to was, given the very slow planting we saw this year, it shows that, yeah, we would be well below trend. And, in fact, the curve worked out to be roughly 20% below trend as we looked at where we're at this year. And the analog years, the closest years to us were 83, 93, 95. And in all of those years, you at least were staring at double-digit percentage losses compared to trend yield. And so that's where that number came from and sort of how it came to be.
Mike Zuzlo, do you have a question for Chad about this particular number?
Yeah, great research as usual. I wondered if since those were done in terms of the crop conditions and crop progress back on June 3rd and the percentage planting and emergence numbers, whether being 2 weeks later, having a better fine tune on what actually got planted before prevent plant dates, whether you've gone back and revised or tightened up the numbers, or are you still on track with that kind of a 2012 scenario?
Well, I think you're right on point here. One of the things I'll say is that I'm going to say that 135, it's not a prediction. When you're looking here, this is what the model sort of brings forward based off of history. And you're right here in looking at, as we look at, you know, planting was catching up, we look at the crop conditions report, those are going to give us much more information to put together what a yield estimate might be going forward. But I think, and I'm going to really key off those analog years, what you know, my analysis sort of showed is that really it does depend upon what weather conditions are going to do to us as we go forward here, especially July into early August. Those three analog years are very important to me. The idea is that 83 was that wet year that turned dry, 93 was that wet year that just stayed wet, and then 95, I'm going to argue, is sort of like our Goldilocks scenario now. Yeah, you got in late, but we had a deeper than average fall, and that helped bring that yield, if you will, back up above the relationship line that just the planting progress would show.
Joe Vaklovic, a question?
Chad, do you know what the acreage is?
Do I know what the acreage is? No, I wish I did.
I don't either. You know? That's the bigger question for maybe just as big of a question for me at this point. I don't think anybody knows what the corn acreage number is within 10 million. Do you guys?
I'm going to agree with you. We probably don't know. And the other thing here is I think about this in history. This is all based upon we tried to plant everything we possibly could, and that's why you got those low yields and get some of that drag down. The more prevented planting there is, the higher the yield number is going to be.
Del Durkle's a question.
You know, you come up with a 135 bushel, and I understand, you know, how you got to that. My question is, what are you using for a trend yield to work off of, though? Because I know USDA's at 176. I have a trend yield, but mine's a little different. That's right around 170, which would match up to you. But what are you using for a trend yield to work off of?
What I used for this analysis was I took the trend, just a simple linear trend, 1980 through 2018 data. So you're right. It would put it in about the, let's say, 172, 173 range.
Okay. I mean, that's always part of the equation to understand how you got there so that people understand, and you're already starting out at a lower number than where the USDA is as far as the trend yield, and people need to be aware of that.
Oh, yeah. No, in the analysis, I tried to lay out exactly, if you will, what I did, how I did it, and basically reveal all the data that I used.
Do you believe it?
Do I believe it? No, I'm going to tell you, I don't believe the number, but I want you to think of this as it shows us the sign, but not the magnitude. The idea is this shows us that we're going to be below trend for sure, and probably somewhat significantly below trend, but we can't tell exactly how far. I think when you look at, compare this analysis versus, for example, what Drs. Irwin and Hubbs did there at Illinois, they were in the, I think, 153 range. Again, that would be a significant yield cut from where our trend line yield is. And so in both cases, we're saying that what we're looking at here is fairly sizable impact here, but we really can't tell exactly how big yet.
Anybody else have a follow-up question for him, or shall we go on?
I had one. Chad, I wondered, I know this is kind of off topic with what you were looking at on the supply side, but I've been talking to clients and subscribers pretty significantly because of African swine fever and China's economy overall, that USDA is not going to be able to meet that 1.95 billion bushel export number. With the knowledge now that they're going to reevaluate the supply side in the July report, do you, in your experience, do you think they will touch demand here, or do you think they'll space it out and only mess with supply and then come back around? Or give me your experience. You've been around longer than I have.
Well, I'm going to guess that they do a little bit of both in this case, sort of the approach like they took this month with corn. They ended up working both the supply and demand sides to sort of, let's call it, move in the direction that we think this thing's going to go. And so I'm expecting that on the soybean side as well. What is unique to me here is how much they have telegraphed that punch to us.
Yeah.
Basically stating that immediately after, you know, the June report was released.
Do you have any bias or preliminary number on an export number for soybeans for 1920?
Tell you the truth, no, I don't have a firm number there on hand. I mean, I've been watching the same data you have and sort of sitting there going, okay, it really, to me, the wild card is here, trying to figure out the African swine fever impact here. You know, China has been in the market sort of, you know, limping by for us for a while. And I'll put it this way, that number is going to depend upon how quickly China can get African swine fever under control, and once they can do that, then the rebuilding of the herds begins, and we could see an uptick in that number deeper into 2020.
I want to visit the acreage and the condition of the crops both. And Chad, I'll stay with you for just a second. I don't know how much of Iowa you have been able to see and whether you've been out very much this summer or not, but what's the condition of the crop at this point?
I would put it this way. The condition of the crop would be good for early June. You know, the idea is that as we're looking out in the fields here, the idea is, you know, the crops that did get planted, they're looking okay if you would push us back, you know, 2 weeks in time. As it stands, I think that's part of the concern here is that what you've got is a crop that is getting through. Here in Iowa, we did get things planted probably at a little more timely pace than most of the rest of the Corn Belt. That crop is moving along, but it is moving along very slowly, and I think that's the biggest issue here is that it was already slow to get planted. It's now being slow to grow.
Mike, have you tooled around Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, the corner of Iowa there where you lived at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the corn crop is much further along the farther the way you get away from the river. And so as you get into Kansas, the corn crop's further along from essentially here in Atchison County, probably about 30 miles west. And then as you start to maybe flatten out again west of Topeka, it gets rough again from what I'm being told. I haven't seen anything west of Topeka. The one thing that I really wonder about is, and this will come into the crop conditions, I guess, in the next couple of weeks, is that I'm getting a picture, maybe the other guys can help fill this in, but I'm getting a picture I'm painting in my mind by client conversations that you get east of the Illinois-Indiana border, it's going to be extremely hard to find 60% plus good to excellent conditions in either corn or beans. Even if it's planted, it's got ponds or it just isn't looking good. And I was surprised in a way that I guess they pushed forward with the planting and essentially mudded it in. I don't know why, whether it's because of the market facilitation program or what, but I think that's a real big issue because it really calls up the idea of not just planted acres, but harvested acres too.
The big scary thing here, because I was in Indianapolis over the weekend, and before we started, I said, you know, I saw two fields of corn that were really good, and both of them were probably getting somewhere close to waist high. One north of Indianapolis, one west of Champaign. You know, as I looked at the crop going down the road, though, on the way over and again on the way back, you know, the crop itself doesn't look bad. But, you know, we've got to be careful talking to people and, you know, trying to understand what we're hearing this year, and that condition and the look of the crop is one thing, and where it is relative to normal in terms of progress is another thing. And I think this year, you know, the industry itself is probably going to have a difficult time differentiating that process, at least until we start to get some numbers from the USDA talking about silking on corn and then blooming on beans themselves, because they're going to be left in this real lurch. They're going to look at a condition number and not know that, you know, this condition number, yeah, maybe it's this, but you have to remember it's 2 to maybe as much as 4 weeks behind in terms of time where it needs to be. And that sets another whole problem that you know, somewhere along the way here this summer could get masked over that people forget about.
Joe, have you been out and about anywhere in the Corn Belt?
I have not. I will be here in the next couple of weeks. I've got customers all over the country, and it really doesn't sound good. I'd say that like somebody else commented, you know, once you get into eastern Illinois, closer to Indiana, Ohio, that seems to be probably the worst of the worst, just based on conversations that I've heard. There's going to be a lot of prevent plant, a lot of acres that were planted in less than ideal conditions. Some of the better spots, I think, include eastern Nebraska. I think a lot of North Dakota is actually in pretty good shape. Iowa, I would probably say, is in the middle somewhere based on what I've heard. We haven't heard a ton about Iowa, like somebody mentioned earlier, which probably means it's okay. But that's kind of what I've heard through the grapevine at this point.
And then, of course, I was into Rockford yesterday, and if you follow my Twitter account, you've seen that. But I was surprised, I think, in McLean County that the crop was as small as it was. I thought they were further along. I would categorize it this way. Coming out of McLean County, it looks like May 4. By the time you get to La Salle, Peru, which is kind of it's in one of the toughest and wettest spots, that looks like April 4, and then you start to go back up in the calendar dates by the time you get to Rockford. From Bloomington to Rochelle is about 100 miles, and that just all looked pretty rough. And my conversations with the weather folks, Mike Tenuri in particular, and he has a video, I think maybe some of you have seen this too, but some of the wettest areas are through western Illinois and through the top of Missouri, that bottom part of Iowa. And I don't know, Chad, if you've heard about those areas. I'm sure you have in Iowa, but my brother went through those in the northern part of Missouri, and he said it's really bad through there as well.
Well, that's the deal. Yeah, as you look, we've had sort of, I describe it as Iowa, we're good in the center, but we're rough along all our edges. And as you especially mentioned, the idea that southeast edge, you know, where Iowa and Missouri, Illinois come together, there's just been a heck of a lot of moisture moved through there. That's where, at least from Iowa State University Extension, where we had the bulk of our prevented planting meetings and calls. And so, that's extremely rough in that area.
Joe, you mentioned acreage up front, and I'll ask you first and then get the rest of the folks. What do you think acreage for corn will look like by the time we get, well, and I don't know about June 28, but by the time we get to the end of the year, maybe?
I really have no idea, and I don't think that the trade does either. I think that if you were to take a poll of, you know, a whole bunch of traders and analysts and economists, I really think the range of estimates would be 10 million wide. I think it's that wide. It might even be more than that. And I think that, you know, in a normal year, you know, it's June 20th. In a normal year, what are we trying to do? We're all trying to figure out what the yield's going to be. And in this year, I think you've got two enormous wild cards. I think the acreage is still an enormous wild card. I think that the yield is still an enormous wild card. And I think that the combination of those two factors are just, I think they're very supportive to prices. The uncertainty is just a massive, massive deal that's been supportive to prices. I mean, they've been buying breaks. Every break that occurs in the corn market's been bought. It's starting to happen more in the soybean market. So I think the acreage is just as big of a discussion as the yield at this point. Could end up being a bigger discussion.
Dale?
Going to work on that this weekend. I don't see, you know, it's just been one of those that you wait until you start looking ahead. I'll really try to work at trying to come up with a representative idea of what I think the USDA might come up with. You know, I know some of the things that have been batted around when you get into social media, et cetera, as far as acreage and yield, you know, I kind of understand, you know, most of the things you read and you hear, I tend to look at as being a little bit on the exaggerated side. It's kind of interesting in the state of Iowa, for example, you know, where planting generally went a little bit better this year and even over into Nebraska. I actually picked up talk that people actually kept planting corn this year if they were in an area where planting was going okay, simply understanding the problems we had, especially in the eastern Corn Belt, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And so there's some places out there that actually may end up with more corn acres than people understand, simply that they're going, hey, corn's a better property than beans right now, and you know, things are okay for me. And so they just kept planting corn, giving up on the beans because of price ratio and other things. So I think it's a wide open game here. I'd agree with Joe. The range of estimates is going to be huge.
You know, the key, I think, right now is, in some of the modeling I do, is tries to anticipate where the trade's trading and prices on futures and try and get a U.S. carryover number. And, you know, that's really hard to do when the world markets are such a big issue nowadays. But it's got a decent look to it as far as utilizing it the last few years. And so when we hit that 920 level in beans, I think the trade was probably getting into that 850 carryover mindset, if I had to guess, using that modeling data. And when we hit that 465 level, in the corn, we probably slipped below a 1.5 carryover. And so I've talked to clients and said, I think we may be closer to a 1.2, 1.3 carryover at this point, and probably could slip into 8.25 carryover in soybeans. And that would equate essentially for Dease corn, a 4.90 level, and for Nove beans, a 9.55 level. And so those are areas where I'm targeting to get puts bought and to start in earnest my 2019 hedging, Todd. I think we have to start at some point. I've always felt as though the revenue per acre is paramount to anything that we talk about. And so if I can clear $900 an acre on corn with a client who feels confident about his yield, and I know that's wide open right now, and if I can clear $750 in gross revenue on beans every year, I think I'll keep that client every year. So that's kind of how I'm at that stage. We're heading into the acreage and stocks report. I want to start kind of knuckling down and at least projecting some profitable places to start hedging.
Chad, when you are thinking about limiting factors for the price of corn or soybeans, either one, and soybeans is fairly obvious, but what are the things that you think about at this time?
Well, at this time, I mean, I think we're staring at probably the most uncertainty we've seen in a crop in I don't know how long. You know, as the discussion has gone around the table here, acreage is uncertain for sure. Yields are definitely uncertain. And then the demand side and how much erosion we might see there as prices move forward, you know, that's what was really catching to me and thinking about, you know, the limitations here on the prices is you've already seen USDA was, they worked with the corn market. They, you know, here we are in June and we've already seen them pull supplies down and put a little demand destruction in there as well. And that's what's sort of keeping everything sort of in play here. We've got both sides of the market moving in the wrong direction. The question is, which one is moving more quickly?
Do you have objectives?
Do I have objectives that I'm looking to meet here? I'll play off of, I think it was Mike was looking at that, you know, revenue per acre and those targets there. And I'm sitting here looking at, right now you've got USDA putting up a season average price of a 380 average. And right now the market itself is pricing more like a 450 season average price for corn. So I'll go back to, okay, yeah, you want to capture as high as a revenue per acre, but I'm looking at some profitable opportunities here to at least put in, let's call it a low baseline, and create, let's call it some of those first really profitable sales that are available here in 2019, while recognizing that, okay, as again, I think Mike said, the idea is we want to make sure that we have the yield to carry forward on that. But the idea is prices on the corn side are definitely where you could be making some moves now. Now, beans, that's where I struggle a bit more just because when I'm looking at the returns we're seeing there, you know, at least the breakdown that ran the numbers for today, I was looking at that season average price of the future seems to be indicating it's in the 930 range where what USDA was significantly below that. So it seems to be pricing in much more, at least the market is pricing in either, you know, a much tighter market than what USDA's got put on the board.
Joe, what kinds of things are you telling your clientele?
Marketing this year is going to be very difficult because you know, I'm going to have some customers that are going to have good crops, and I'm going to have some customers that I'm going to have no crops, and there's going to be things in between. So I guess it's a case-by-case basis this year more. So, I mean, it's like that every year, but this so more than any other year. I mean, I think that at this point with this much uncertainty, if you want to be a hedger, you know, you can make some cash sales, but I don't think you want to be super aggressive. I'm honestly probably a put buyer more than anything, and that's usually not my favorite thing in the world. It's really not the most efficient way to hedge, but I know that everybody wants to participate in further upside. I know that if corn wants to go to 550, that everybody wants to be in the ball game. So I mean, there's really only one way to hedge while being involved, and just owning some puts is the way to do it.
What about old crop?
I'd probably sell it all tomorrow on the open, to be honest with you. There's gonna be some delivery. There's gonna be some delivery pressure between now and next Friday. I'll tell you that. There's been delivery pressure associated with every big delivery period, the December, the March, the May. There's a lot of old crop bushels out there, and I know guys have been holding out, but gosh, was this a bailout in regard to old crop bushels. And make no mistake about it, ahead of this weather event, the farmer was undersold in regard to last year's crop by a wide margin. This is a big-time bailout.
You know, when you look at the old crop, you know, the big thing I think have to think about is the report coming at the end of the month and the risk that particular report represents. And none of us know what it's going to say. We've all talked about acreage, but another thing that's going to play into it as far as corn is concerned is going to be this quarterly stocks number again for last year's crop, because I've seen at times when you get a shock like we had back in March, you get the flip side of that when you get to June too. So you got to be kind of careful, but there's a lot of risk, and it kind of depends on the way the industry is biased on the new crop in particular going into that end of June report. I think the risk is just too big if, in fact, the corn market stays strong and that you can have something negative come out of that. And with whole crop, you got a time gun against your head you're always working with. So I have a bias. Any strength that we have here over the next couple of weeks yet, it's called, you know, peddle the old crop, get it out of your hair, and put all your efforts, your energies into new crop. And yeah, old crop has gotten the bailout. You know, so beans, you know, that with everything going on, it's hard to build a big story unless the weather really plays out. But there's another whole game that nobody's talked about here, you know, and I didn't look closely at Friday's CFTC numbers, but, you know, we got from where we were in early May to where we are now, basically on the funds getting blown out of shorts, but they haven't even started the buy process yet. What happens if they decide they really are going to get after this and buy? Is there another leg to the upside that a lot of us just don't really see, feel, and we have to be a little careful not getting in front of them if they decide to come after this and be a buyer? In corn in particular, when you look at the nearby, you know, we got over the 15-16 highs, we've gotten over the psychological number at 450, and really technically I have nothing until 5 to 520. So I'm kind of in a big gray area here. You know, I mean, if the market's going to roll uphill, who's going to fight it? So we can have more of a lift than people think. But with old crop, you always have to remember I have a defined amount of time that I probably think I want to carry it. So I'm looking for a place to get rid of it.
Yeah, right. On those July call options that I think a lot of producers bought because they decided they, at that point, they wanted to play. They also didn't want to pay for the time. Those are in the process now. Anybody have a suggestion on what they should do with them?
I think old crop business is just... it's something you're on a timeline. I mean, most guys are not going to want to carry old crop bushels into the new crop marketing year. So you basically got to look at it like this. You've got options to go off tomorrow. Sure, you could take the long futures. But really, this is something you're going to want to be done with probably within the next month to 6 weeks. I mean, some guys might go to September, I suppose, and you could deliver against that September contract. But, I mean, given that the market is close enough to the recent highs, we've run up more than a dollar in futures, I mean, this is probably a time to be done with this stuff, or pretty close to it at least.
So from your perspective, just go ahead and print the profits.
I think so. I think confine your risk to one crop year, confine your risk to 19, and take your bailout that you got on the 18.
I want to talk about prevent plant too, because now we've passed prevent plants for dates for corn all, and we've today finished up prevent plant dates for soybeans across the whole, or the bulk of the belt. There are some in the deep southern areas that have yet to come. I think in Iowa, the date was mostly or all June 15th. In Illinois, June 20, going east through Indiana and Ohio. Is there any indication that producers are not stopping? They're planting, they have what, another in Illinois and through the 25th to plant corn, I suppose. And I don't actually haven't looked to see what the date for soybeans would be. And did you give a recommendation to producers at all in Iowa on prevent plant?
No, in this case, because again, it's sort of a case by case basis because of how well could they get in those fields. But as we looked here, you know, you're looking at those several options, and I know I talked to a bunch of producers who, for example, they were thinking soybeans this year, but when they got deep into May and they were looking at whether they were going to make that move or not, I saw some of those that were intending soybeans originally claim prevented planting on corn because they could. You know, there's nothing set in stone, and then they, if you will, shifted land around in other ways. And I think that's what's going to be interesting here, and another reason why acreage is so uncertain. the idea is that you were trying to decide, do I stick with the corn? Do I shift to beans? Do I take that prevented planting option? And if I do that, well, I know lots of folks were considering, okay, what do I come back with a cover crop? And then the question became, does that cover crop possibly qualify me for the trade aid? And so you had, let's call it, every farm had its own separate calculus as to what would work out best economically for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you bring up a huge point because I'm hearing both right now, Todd. I'm hearing folks that are kind of down by Bone Gap or Olney area in Illinois that are saying, I can plant beans up to July 4th and still probably get 40 bushels, dot, 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 if I don't have a freeze. And then I hear as you get into the central part of the bean belt, I can't take a chance this late, and I'm not going to fight the, if it stays wet, I'm not going to fight the weeds and how hard it's going to be to get a decent yield. And so beans, I think, in part, have been able to not be the leader to the downside because of this. And so the wetter we stay these next 2 weeks, I think you will see more and more and more prevent plant rack up in the soybeans. And I'm not sure the funds understand that yet. I think maybe the funds are letting the beans go up because of the corn and the wheat market rally or because the stock market and things that are unrelated to delayed plantings and to the point where we could get prevent plants. So I think going back to your old crop sales question, I think since we made these lows this week and tested some really key support levels, filled a gap in the no beans in the overnight trade Thursday night and tested the 200-day moving average, I mean, really big things happening. And then you look at the crude oil going 5% higher, gold crossing $1,400 an ounce. You've got some really big things, both macro and micro, going on that you want follow through here, I think, to test those old highs. And I think that's really ultimately your answer going into the acreage and stocks report is, what's this trade feel like going into the acreage and stocks report? Will it even matter? Because their technicals are telling them it doesn't matter.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Joe Vaklovic of Standard Grain, I'll start with you.
Just kind of like I mentioned earlier, that my big thought right now, I guess, acreage and production, both for corn and for soybeans, are huge, massive unknowns. And I think that for the moment, those are supportive factors for the markets. That being said, there will be sell-offs in these markets, and there will be corrections. I mean, if we're ultimately going to much higher price levels, it's not going to be easy. You've got to have short sellers in a market to give money to long buyers, essentially, if this market is to move higher. So there's going to be a day where corn's down 20 cents for no reason. There will be a day where beans are down 30 to 40 for no reason. It could be a USDA report. It could just be a technical deal. But I'm still kind of friendly here. I think the breaks are going to be bought.
Dale Durkholz?
You know, the one thing that I think is important, and it kind of follows up with what Joe said, you know, you do have some downside risk in a game, you know, but yet we do have upside potential. But a bull market always needs to be fed. And so we need some new information along the way to keep this ball game rolling uphill and rolling uphill easily. So as we get closer and closer to the June reports there, I think people need to be a lot more careful in that there could be even a neutral report, a downside break in the market that would come along. Yeah, we'd recover and probably get back at these levels or whatever the highs are here at some point in the future, but you got to start to acknowledge downside risk in the game.
Mike Zuzulo.
I think one of the things, going back to Chad's research on the yield side of the equation, I'll flip the other side of the coin and talk about the dollar and what it was doing back in 2012, and it was trading right around 80 going into the later part of 2012, and this all feeds back into the demand destruction. And so we're essentially 20% higher in the dollar trade right now than we were back in 2012, and I think that ultimately is going to be help us to understand, well, how much supply destruction we've had and then how much demand destruction we've had. If we get a break in the dollar here, I can lift my prices going into July, August, September, if those yield losses are really there.
And Chad Hart.
I'm going to argue, when you're looking here, well, while we're all keying on that end of June report that usually comes out in the ass, the other thing I'm going to be watching here is that in order to get the planting numbers and get a good feel for there, I'm starting to watch the risk management agency and what they're paying out in indemnities. as we get these prevented planting claims rolling in there, that's going to be the first place where that data is going to show up. And so those indemnity updates each week may become just as important as the end of month acreage report.
Good point.
Hey, where do we find those?
RMA, if you go to their website, they have their summary of business data listed on that site. And then as we get to moving through the summer, they will literally put out weekly updates on indemnity tables and maps showing not only, if you will, the national number, but, okay, what counties are lighting up in terms of indemnity payments.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up, listen to us on demand, and the whole of our program online at willag.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Joe Baklavic of Standard Grain, Mike Zuzulo from globalanalytics.biz, Chad Hart from Iowa State University, and Dale Durkholz. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.